The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
We'll get to things that are important to us shortly, but I roll in here because the TVs in the producer room don't work, so I don't know what's going on in the world of sports unless I look online. So I roll in here and the TV's on, and it is, of course, First Take, and the question is about tonight's football game. On the cryon below Ryan Clark, as he's gesticulating, he's up there with Peter Schrager and Dan Orlovsky and Stephen A. Smith. The question is, what do you need to see tonight to believe in the Ravens? The Ravens much talked about because no one is running away with the AFC North, so there's this thought that with Lamar Jackson being back tonight, they can go on a run, and I get that. But what do you need to see tonight to believe in the Ravens against a 2-6 Dolphins team? Nothing. There's nothing they can do tonight to make me think, oh, the Ravens are back. There's not. They're playing an awful football team.
Yeah, if they win.
Yeah, just win the game because it's another step in trying to hawk down the Steelers. If they beat the Dolphins 33-0, who cares? We know the Dolphins stink. I don't know who came up with that question. I'm sure they're offering better analysis than just win, but there's nothing that can be done. They're not playing the Chiefs. And by the way, the Ravens have done enough winning in the regular season that our lack of belief in them isn't about regular season performances. If you don't believe in the Ravens, it's because you just expect them not to show up when it matters most, or at least do something very Raven-like, like drop a two-point conversion or fumble because you have the ball in the wrong hand as you're being tackled like Lamar Jackson did against the Bills. I expect them, because they are the Ravens and their defense has played better, to cover the, I think right now it's over a touchdown spread. I mean, Sean may have a Prize Picks thing that focuses on that game, and we may hear about that a little bit later. But, yeah, the question seems ridiculous. You beat a bad football team on the road on Thursday night for a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. That's what you're supposed to do. Much like it was the Rockets' job, and it was the expectation from us that they'd go into Toronto and win the game, and they did. A relatively easy win. You know, Toronto shot the ball well from three. But the Rockets weren't really challenged. Anytime Toronto knocked down a shot or two, particularly in the fourth quarter, Kevin Durant would knock down a three. He had 12 points in that fourth quarter, scored 30-plus in the game. This is what I think a lot of the regular season is going to be like, where they aren't going to be really challenged. They're going to bat teams aside anytime they do go on a run because they're so much more talented than most of the teams they're going to see. They're going to be opponents that may play a style that doesn't suit the Rockets, so that makes the game close. Maybe they have an off-night shooting. But for the most part, in Toronto, you beat them by 18 points. You control that game throughout. You're up, I think, by 7 at the half. You score 70 points. Now, Toronto this season has been bad defensively, so maybe it won't be to the tune of 139 points a night. But I feel like we're going to have a lot of relatively relaxed evenings for this Rocket team, because this is what they can do against some of the lesser teams in the NBA. We saw it against Brooklyn, where they weren't challenged. Brooklyn's a special kind of bad, and then Toronto is maybe a level above, but they did what they wanted. And part of that reason is they have Steven Adams. The Rockets ran a double big lineup, of course, but they also ran a double big pick and roll, where Şengün had the ball above the arc, and they brought Steven Adams in to set the screen. I don't know if I've ever seen, like, of course, you've with Kevin Durant, and he's got if he plays with a big, you might see a big set of screen for him. And because of his size, even though he wouldn't ascribe to it, he's a big himself. I've seen that, of course, a ball handling stretch four, if you want to say, have a center call, run up and set a screen. I don't know if I've seen two centers set screens for each other, or at least one set a screen for the other, and that result in positive things. That's the versatility of Şengün because of his playmaking. And, of course, Steven Adams is just a menace to deal with. And, in fact, I don't have to tell you. I'm sure you've watched it enough. Let's hear from Colin Murray-Boyles. He's a rookie for the Raptors, and he got his first taste of Steven Adams and the Rockets as a whole. Here is he after the game talking about what it's like to face off against the team.
Like, he's insanely strong. My wrists are sore right now. I'm trying to box him out and tussle with him as impossible. His strength is, I didn't think it was like that. Like, couldn't move on him. Nobody get over his screens. Like, I was asking him what his routine is mid-game. Like, it's insane. It's insane. And like, with him, and then you have to worry about Şengün and KD, that is, it's crazy. It's crazy what they got.
I don't know what the 6'7", 245-pound Colin Murray-Boyles can do, even if he had Steven Adams' routine step-by-step. Whatever Steven Adams' routine is, part of that's just nature, how he was born, who his parents are. Colin Murray-Boyles is a big person himself. He's 6'7", 245, but there are levels to this in the NBA. And as you heard him say, he just was incredulous, laughing at the very beginning of the clip about what Steven Adams is and how you can't handle him at all.
Because there's a level, because Steven Adams isn't like the biggest guy in the league,
no.
You know, or the most jacked guy in the league. There does seem to be an element of just like country strong.
Yeah,
to
New
him.
Zealand strong.
Yeah, there's just like some sort of just, he just has a strength to him where he just kind of manhandles other grown men that are, I mean, oftentimes pretty like-sized. Like he's on the big, I mean, he's bigger than most NBA players.
6'11", 265. He's a big guy, yeah.
But it's like the way he rebounds, there's a possession where he got like three offensive rebounds. He just taps it to himself, then he gets two hands on it, kicks it out, that shot misses, taps it back to himself, gets it again. Like it's just, it is like, you know, playing your little brother. Like that's what it looks like sometimes with him.
And it's not my favorite thing he does, but he is also self-aware. He isn't the big who thinks, I got to go up and get mine on an offensive rebound. He is never forcing an offensive rebound and trying to score. Like he'll get his rare, maybe not so rare, he'll get his putbacks on tips and stuff like that. But if there's no opportunity for him to score in that way, he's more than fine grabbing a rebound, finding someone who's open. And he has been kind of a revelation because we kind of forgot Steven Adams. He kind of floated around, played for Memphis, had his injury issues. Of course, we know his time with the Thunder. But he has been supremely effective as a Rocket. It's just funny to listen to like 6'7", 245's big. That's a legitimate big individual.
Yeah.
A rookie notwithstanding. And still, he's like, no, I can't handle him.
To outline what you're saying, he's averaging 6 offensive rebounds per game. He's averaging 3.8 shots per game.
Yeah.
He's getting more offensive rebounds than he is like, oh, let me try to look, you know, try to get mine here. It's like, no, he gets the offensive rebound, and especially on this team, kick it out. Where's number 7? Kick it out to him. Like, it's not like a new, you know, groundbreaking principle, but a 3-point shooter off an offensive rebound. That guy's going to be more open than more often than not.
Yeah, the defense has been warped because of
people
trying to get a rebound or even sometimes leaking out because they think they've got the defensive rebound handled. And, 6-plus offensive rebounds per game.
It's ridiculous.
It's nuts.
It's ridiculous.
Except we see it every time he's out there. And he does it even when he starts, which he hasn't done the last couple of days, Josh Okogie continues to start. It's not like he's getting out there for 35 minutes a night. This is if we're looking at what he's averaged this year, he's averaged this year just under 25 minutes a night. So he is not someone who has extended minutes to build those numbers. It doesn't matter.
No. And they just win his minutes all so the much. Time.
Yeah,
he was plus 14 last night. Now, last night they won by what? 26? No, yeah. 16. So he was plus 14 in a game they won by 16.
He's averaging just under 11 rebounds per game in 24 and a half minutes.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head when he got traded, because he got traded for Victor Oladipo, two guys that weren't playing that year.
It was kind of, oh, why are they doing that? He's not going to play this year.
Yeah, and even like going forward, it's like, okay, they got their offseason work early by just getting the backup center for Şengün, the guy who's going to play 12 minutes a game while Şengün plays 36. Like, that's just, okay, cool, whatever. Let's hope he has something left in the tank. And he said, I mean, basically since he's come back, he's had more in the tank than I thought. His body seems better than it did at the tail end of his time with Memphis. Like, he seems like he's...
That year off certainly
had to help. Rejuvenated.
Yeah. So even last year, you look at his minutes, he was only up to 14 minutes as they were trying to build him back. We know he had the load management, wouldn't play back-to-backs. And
month by month, though, I imagine that's just...
It increased, and now he's up to more in line with what he was in Memphis. He's still not up there. Like, throughout his career, when he became an established player, he was around 26, and it kept growing, particularly in OKC. At 24 and a half minutes a night to be as productive as he is, nearly 8 points per game because of all the offensive rebounding he does, and guys will drive, they'll lay it off to him for a dunk or a layup and stuff, and nearly 11 rebounds per game at just under 25 minutes.
How old is he?
He's
probably a little younger than
he's always younger than you think.
Yeah, because he's a one and done.
Yeah, he's 32. He's been around since 2013.
Yeah, I would have thought like whatever.
35, 36, yeah, 35. Maybe. Yeah.
I guess it's because his rookie year was what, 2013, 2014.
Was that the year after they made the final? Or 2 years? Probably 2 years after.
2 years. They made it in 12. Yeah. He was actually the draft pick in the he was the first round pick in the OKC Harden trade.
Got it.
Yeah. And it just mentally, I always just put him with the rest of the OKC guys. It's like, no, he was by far the youngest. So yeah, that's crazy that he's lived like an entire NBA life and he still has a few years left.
Yeah, if he wants to continue playing. Yeah.
I think he's on for like one or two more years after this.
It's going to be pretty effective, and he has been, as far as the moves that Rafael Stone has made, that one went by the wayside. We set up how it happened and why that might have went by the wayside, and it's been one of their bigger wins as far as trades are concerned. Victor Oladipo, at last check, of course, he's dealt with so many injuries. Yeah. He was playing in the NBA preseason, but for one of the other teams they bring over from
like China.
Yeah, from a different part of the world, just to have an international game, I guess. Yeah. That's where he is right now as he tries to make a comeback. Steven Adams full on in the rotation for what we believe is a title contender. So the Rockets go in there and win. KD, as I said, had a big fourth quarter to keep Toronto at bay. They're on track. I mean, we weren't. No one should have been panicking about the 0-2 start, and we see what they can be. We won't do the thing like we do with the Texans. We're like, they haven't beat a good team yet. Is this even real? They got plenty of opportunities, and we certainly believe that they will start to beat good teams as they come up on the schedule.
Easy. Although, you know,
haven't proved it
yet. The playoff committee is gonna. they need some RPI wins to really bolster their case.
As I was looking at their schedule right now.
They have a pretty light schedule.
Yeah, I mean,
they have a pretty
those
light
wins
schedule.
You're talking about to bolster the resume?
It might be San Antonio, right? That might be their next one next week.
They got a Celtics team who's won their last couple, so that's their next game.
You know what? I've just seen what's going on with Jaylen Brown, and I guess wrongly so, although I'm not ready to say wrongly so, written them off this year, given all the hairline shenanigans that's going on.
Yeah, they had a good...
And then him making a stream about it.
Talking about calling LeBron about going to Turkey.
Seems unserious. Yeah, seems like they're not taking this year seriously.
I don't think their play-by-play guy is either. Since you brought it up, we'll come back with that. If you don't know, Jaylen Brown, because of the length of time he had braids or whatever, he now has a shorter haircut, and people are noticing that sometimes for whatever reason, he has rubbed the top of his head on other players on the opposing team a couple times, I guess, try to create space. Stuff has come off the top of his head. You want to call it filler or Beijing, depending on what you think he's using. You can see the spot where his head rubbed on the player's white jersey or white undershirt. He has made reference to it by possibly going to Turkey. Now the Celtics play-by-play guy is making reference, so we'll get to that when we come back. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. We'll hear from the Texans as well as they continue to get ready to face the Broncos. We got some good news on the injury front for the wide receivers, not so much for a tight end. So we'll certainly get to the Texans, and we'll also do our normal nonsense, and we'll highlight it by hearing from the Celtics play-by-play guy when we come back. But before we go to break, I want to remind you, now's the time. If you're seeing a little notice because you have YouTube TV, I've seen it throughout this week. I noticed it over the weekend. Go to keepmynetworks.com because that's ESPN telling you and YouTube TV telling you there's a bit of an issue. And if you want to keep ESPN programming on your television, now's the time. If you love First Take and you love College Game Day, go to keepmynetworks.com to make sure you keep ESPN on YouTube TV. We'll be back.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? No? Then download it now in your app store.
In the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to this Celtics town, and then we'll move on. The Rockets' next opponent is the Celtics, not for a couple days. So you are hoping or hoping not to have the Rockets on because you got Halloween plans tomorrow night. They're not on. Do what you'd like. I remember a time where we had to plan Halloween around Astros World Series games. I remember those times. Not so much right now. Hopefully we get back to that. We'll get into the World Series a little bit as the Blue Jays are one win away from winning a World Series, thanks to a pitcher who was an A-ball earlier this year. I'm sure it's been talked about quite a bit. I'm sure it's a giant conversation piece every time it comes up. But the fact that we've got a guy who's made three starts, he made three starts in the regular season, and is pitching in a game five and sets the rookie record for strikeouts. If I cared about baseball, I might think about how spectacular that is, what's going on. But since we are only referencing baseball because it means the Dodgers may not win a World Series, I can't pretend like I'm overwhelmed by what's happening, but I understand it. If I cared about baseball as much as I cared about college football, I'd be like, you know what's a big deal? That kid who was an A-ball, being a guy who shuts down the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium, and we'll hear from him in a little bit because he, as I said, the history, 12 strikeouts, rookie record in a World Series game. He had a little post-game thing with Ken Rosenthal that you'll hear a little bit later from us. Or at least it's from Fox, but we'll play it for you. But let's get to this sound. It was Celtics-Cavs last night. The Celtics started off slow, but they've won a couple in a row. This was at home, and we talked about Jaylen Brown and what's going on with him and his hair products. Here is a Celtics announcer referencing it.
3-on-2, Brown the spin and the deuce.
Good to see Jaylen Brown in transition. You always want to see your star player get some easy baskets.
Or fly to the basket like he'll be flying to Turkey at some point this season.
Oh, come on.
That is the narrative right now online. Jaylen Brown has been a main character for different reasons during his time as a Celtics. Some of it because he can't dribble with his left hand. Then he became a finals MVP. Now it's about every time you show up against a player with a white jersey, you rub your head on it, and there's a clear mark, like a stain. Maybe turkey's in the offing. It happens to the best of them, I guess. But that's the nonsensical part of our show, referencing that clip. I think the Celtics announcer is it Dylan Carter?
Drew Carter.
Drew Carter is his name. Drew Carter with the reference. Hey, now's the time for it. you're not really supposed to be good this year. Maybe you make the playoffs. It's time to get the jokes off.
Yeah, it's a fun subplot.
Yes, this is a fun season. You know, not a lot of stress. You made trades in the offseason to limit some of your financial concerns. If Jaylen Brown is doing it himself by going on a stream and saying, I need to call LeBron about maybe heading to Turkey, you're allowed to do it too.
Yeah.
Drew Carter.
Also, LeBron's like the famous person I would not ask about this.
If we're going. Yeah, I would ask Mo Salah.
Yeah, there's might, a lot more.
There's a lot more successful
surgeries
that have been done. LeBron's doesn't look like it's gone well.
No. I feel like he got his, though, like a long
before
time ago.
Turkey became Turkey when it came to that. Hey, you got a lot of money. You can do what you can to fix it from teeth to hair.
Yeah.
Why not, I guess, as long as it's done well. I don't think any of these guys have a problem. D'Amico's come home a long time ago.
That'd be amazing.
If this offseason he winds like up, he pulls a Deion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Just pulls.
Speaking of guys who it went well for.
Yeah.
Deion.
Yeah.
I don't know that. If D'Amico is a guy who shaves his head because he wants to, not because he has to. What if we find that?
That'd
out?
Be crazy.
He's been doing this for years.
I can't imagine him with hair.
Yeah, he was bald as a linebacker for the Texans.
Yeah. As like a 25-year-old, he didn't have hair.
Now you got me on a D'Amico Ryans with hair search. I want to know if we've ever seen it, if it's ever been
like
a
as
thing.
An adult. Like, I'm sure he had hair at some point.
I pulled up a high school picture and he had hair.
Okay.
It looks, the hairline looks strong enough that it looks like he could have done it at Bama if he wanted to. But I don't remember a time at Bama or with the Texans, certainly as a player, that he had hair. Hey, he's made a decision. It's working for him. I don't think anyone can say otherwise.
It hasn't been like, sir, we cannot give you the
even
head
in
coaching
his,
job.
Even in his Bama photo, he didn't have hair. Like his team, the team photo that goes on the website, no hair.
Yeah.
No idea.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It just never occurred to me that he's been bald the entire time I've known about him.
Since he was a young man, we've always seen him as a bald
man. Somebody needs to ask that.
Yes. Stop focusing on all the negativity. Ask D'Amico Ryans if he's bald by choice. Let's do that and see if he has an answer to that question.
He must shave his head like every morning, because there's not even like
you never get you never see that. Like he's like some bald guys, you know, if you did the stubble things, you'll probably put a hat on. He's never seen the hat on.
Yeah.
That it's pristine, you would say. The man takes care of himself. All right, let's hear him in his own words. Not about his head or his hair, but about his quarterback. C.J. Stroud had his best performance of the season on Sunday. Hope that continues. Hopefully it's not just opponent dependent. Here's D'Amico Ryans on what C.J. Stroud is doing well.
C.J. has truly grown just as we've went throughout the season of just really commanding the offense. Like being very disciplined with, you know, the calls in the huddle, being disciplined with his reads and where he's supposed to go with the football. As the season has progressed, I feel like he's done a great job of taking what's given to him. If one is open, he's taking one. And he's making great decisions. Also, when it's not there, taking the opportunity to check the ball down to our backs. That was a great play that he made last week to check the ball down to Woody, and Woody runs for 50 yards. You know, that's just by the quarterback remaining disciplined, doing what he has to do, and making great decisions to make sure as an offense we're pressing forward.
Obviously, the season's a bit.
So he went into that game without established weapons for the most part. No Nico Collins, no Christian Kirk. Those guys return to practice. The expectation is, as Nico Collins continues to work through protocol, the concussion protocol, that he's going to be available for Sunday. So he may have a very advantageous matchup. We'll see what the Broncos decide to do without Patrick Surtain. He would be the one that would travel with a guy like Nico. I don't know that they'll do that with a Riley Moss. It may just be by committee for the Texans. And we talked about it yesterday. I think it even became our clip that went up on social media and other spots, that the secondary, sure, you not having to deal with Patrick Surtain is great, but it doesn't really matter if you can't keep Cooper and Benito off of your guy. So that'll be the question for me. how often are those guys wrecking downs? And if you can run the football, that certainly limits their opportunities. If you're in third and four as opposed to third and nine, so where they can really get off and time your snap count and just get after the passer. I honestly, it's not breaking news or something that's more than simple thinking, but win on first and second down, limit the opportunities for those pass rushers who lead the league in sacks, the team as a whole does, to determine the game. You know what I want to hear? Whoever's calling the game? Man, Cooper and Benito have had a really quiet day. That's if that is heard, the Texans are winning this football
game. If, like, in the late third, early fourth quarter, something comes up with Benito or Cooper, and they're like, and that's a name we haven't mentioned a lot
today.
They
make a play in the run game.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. If that is happening, whether because your tackles have great days or you've got your sixth offensive lineman out there and Blake Fisher, if that occurs, we're talking about a team who had their biggest win of the year. I said the Broncos were 5-2 yesterday. They're 6-2. So if you can beat a 6-2 football team who leads the AFC West, then we're like, okay.
Already bowl eligible. Yeah.
Sure. Then when we come back on Monday and say, what do the Texans need to do for you to believe in them? It makes more sense than what they did on First Take when they asked what the Ravens need to do tonight because they're playing a bad football team.
What if Nick Caley just cracked football with like
six offensive linemen?
Six offensive. More guys to block.
Well, maybe he has. We'll see, because the team that the Ravens are playing tonight went to six offensive linemen quite a bit in their game against Atlanta, and they have their best, most consistent day run the football.
People have been thirsting for Mike McDaniel all season, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Haley's doing the same thing.
So we will see.
Flirting versus harassment.
We will see if the six offensive linemen thing becomes a trend.
Everyone's riding the Caley wave, yeah.
If you want to say that.
I do want to say
that. He did run it out there more than anyone else in football this year, the 26 snaps that they did do it. We'll see if the Dolphins do it to great success against the Ravens, then we would know. Someone's cracked the code. You have your tackle who was slated to start but isn't good enough to start.
Nope.
And make him a pseudo tight end.
Yep.
And now,
boom.
No one can mess with you.
What if instead of having two subpar tackles, instead of having two subpar tackles, you have three?
Huh? But that subpar tackle is a tight end in disguise.
Yes,
which strengthens the unit altogether.
Alone, Blake Fisher can't block Benito, but with the powers of Ariante Ursary combined.
Look at him now.
They can buy C.J. Stroud 2.5 seconds.
Just enough time
to throw it to Woody Marks, five yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Sure, and let Woody Marks make a big play. Yeah. Or, with Nico back, a couple in-breakers.
Those deep digs.
And even the quick slants, the one-step slants, stuff like that. All you need is Blake Fisher to combine with Ursary like Voltron or the Power Rangers when the Megazord comes out. And now look at him. Impenetrable.
Boom.
Nick Caley.
600 pounds of offensive lineman blocking.
blocking a 245-pound defensive end.
Yeah, that's all it took.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. We'll hear from C.J. Stroud when we come back because, sure, Nico looks like he's on track to come back, but a guy who had a really good performance was Jalen Knoll. We'll hear from C.J. Stroud on why that happened and how Jalen Knoll has improved. Somehow, Jalen Knoll, who wasn't even the first Iowa State receiver taken, has become a bit of a giant talking point, mostly because we just assume if it ain't Jalen Knoll, then it's Braxton Berrios, and no one really wants to watch Braxton Berrios out there for 40-plus snaps. Berrios played like 30 snaps or so last week. Knoll played more snaps than him, partly due to the fact that you were missing your top two receivers, at least with Nico and Kirk. So it wasn't like Berrios was never on the field, but at least the snaps flipped from him having more.
It seems more in line.
To Knoll having more. And you would hope with the two guys coming back that Knoll stays on the field and Berrios snaps come down even further.
That's risky. That's a risky.
That's why I said I would hope. Yeah. I didn't guarantee it, because you just never know.
Listen, Nick Haley revolutionized offensive line play. Let's see as you move farther away from the offensive line whether he revolutionizes putting your best receivers on the field.
You say revolutionize. I'm not sure that's the proper word for what we're asking for. Not sure. All right. We'll go to break with that. We'll hear from CJ Stroud when we come back. But, Sean, if people want to watch ESPN tonight.
Yes. On First Take on Monday, they're going to talk about how Nick Haley revolutionized football by putting his three best receivers on the field with six offensive linemen. And if you want to hear that conversation, if you want to hear Stephen A. Smith give his flowers to Nick Haley, and you're a YouTube TV customer, you could lose that opportunity. You could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and much more. Take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So we'll hear from CJ Stroud, but what he's going to say is far less interesting than what happened by happenstance. So, you may or may not know who Kai Cenat is, the streamer, very famous streamer. You may or may not know who Northwest is, the daughter of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. I would even bet that you might not know what either one of them looks like. Well, because it's Halloween season, Northwest decided to dress up like Kai Cenat. She put on a wig to mimic his hair, although I think he's recently had a haircut.
What Lance would describe as Debrat hair.
Debrat hair, sure. And also fake facial hair.
Yeah, fake goatee.
Yeah, the problem is, well, not the problem. It's actually just funny for people who know. She looks like C.J. Stroud.
She looks more like C.J. Stroud than she does Kai Cenat.
She looks more like C.J. Stroud almost than that guy that people always say, let C.J. Stroud have a bad game, like the guy who wears a Texans jersey because he knows he looks somewhat similar to C.J. Stroud. She looks closer to C.J. Stroud in that getup maybe than C.J. Stroud does, to be honest with you. So, that's out there.
Yeah. Very funny.
It's very funny. Just type in Northwest CJ Stroud at any point on social media, Twitter specifically, and you'll see it. You're like, oh, Kanye's daughter, when she wants to, can look like CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Even though she likely doesn't know who CJ Stroud is.
Very likely.
And considering some of the back and forth in the media, if we want to, like, tamp down the anxiety and stress, let's have some fun.
Yeah.
Will Kunkel. CJ's no longer available this week. He had his availability. But if it goes well on Sunday and they beat the Broncos and think everyone's feeling pretty good, Lil Kunko, DJ Bienname, ask CJ Stroud if he's seen this.
Maybe good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alexander asked.
We've come to the conclusion someone in his life has sent him that.
Yes, 100%.
The question is, does anyone from the Kardashian side know that she looks like CJ Stroud?
Are they in on what we're laughing
at? Are they aware? And CJ goes back to California on December 28th. They play the Chargers in LA. There needs to be a meetup. And she needs to dress up like what she thinks is Kai Cenat. And she can stand next to CJ, have a photo op, swap a jersey.
Yeah, jerseys.
Maybe she gets a jersey. He gets a Skims.
Sign
I don't know.
A jersey.
Who knows? Whatever. But it's out there. When she wants to, the daughter of Kanye West can look like CJ Stroud at any point.
I mean, the damage is already done.
Yeah.
The next time he throws two interceptions, boom.
Yeah.
There.
They are going to pull that photo out. The media will, well, not the media, just the internet
people.
As a whole.
The people.
Yeah, the people, not the media. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen anytime soon. And someone who might help him avoid interceptions is the guy we talked about before we close out the segment, Jalen Knoll. He's played really well in his moments, in his opportunities, and he looks to get more opportunities. Here's CJ Stroud on his young receiver and what he's done to improve.
I think it takes time, and I think, like I said before, it's like failure is a good thing. Like, it's a chance to learn. You know, of course, you don't want to do it on Sundays, but if it does happen, you learn from it, you fix it. And I think he's super coachable. You know, he wants to do what's right. He's in here, you know, working his tail off, and, you know, I practice doing the same thing. So I think he's going to be a great player, and he's shown that week in and week out, you know, getting better, learning scheme, learning coverage, and, you know, adapting to it. So I think he's going to be great.
So the growth is there from the young player. I assumed when I heard all the Jayden Higgins is a Nico type, and you think of a big receiver, you wanted another big receiver on the outside. Because if we're talking about coming into the year, it looked like Nico, Christian Kirk has your slot. And if Jayden Higgins performed, you'd have another big receiver on the outside. And Higgins certainly gets his snaps, but Hutchinson has been a bigger contributor, the other Iowa State wide receiver. But Noel is week by week getting more opportunities and playing better. He had the big play on, you maybe call it a deep post or the deep over route that CJ Stroud threw. And that was one of the plays. I talked about it earlier in the week. That was one of the plays that San Francisco guy, content creator, who breaks down San Francisco film, was criticizing the 49ers for corner not doing his job. The opposite field corner or side corner for not doing his job. It was a great throw. I'm not taking that away from it. But I was like, in the game, big play. We have not a lot of those. That's great. Great job by Jalen Noel. And then I watched the film of this guy. It's like, the corner's right there. He bites down on a guy he shouldn't have been covering. He would have been right in position. Even him in the clip goes, look, all credit to C.J. Stroud. All credit to C.J. Stroud. But if the guy does his job right, C.J. goes someplace else because that play isn't available.
Do you remember what that 49ers player number was? Was it number 27?
You want to talk about Jair Brown's?
Jair Brown. This is from John Chapman. He's a Niners watcher. He said, Jair Brown allowed a perfect 158.3 passer rating when targeted versus the Texans. He also led the team in missed tackles and had two more missed tackles that didn't count because he didn't get close enough to touch the ball carrier.
Mm-hmm. I did see that pop up. I will.
That's bad. That's a bad day for Jair Brown.
Yeah. The internet and some research doesn't do anyone any favors.
Some guys have to hate that fans now can just watch all 22.
Yeah, it's tough. Because even if they're not correct, they can draw their own conclusions on things. Because they're not inside the building, per se.
I don't know if the Jair Brown thing's even correct. Yeah, I don't know. I just saw the tweet.
Yeah, they don't know his.
We talked about it.
His exact assignment. They don't know. That's what upsets offensive line people.
Yeah.
Considering PFF grades. Yeah. But, yeah, it's tough when a fan can just pull up. It's readily available, and they could maybe, if they are able to, pick out every time you did something wrong. Like, I don't know the bona fides of this Johnny Dell's FA guy, on the 49ers guy, but it feels like he knows what he's talking about when he's ripping the 49ers defensive covers to shreds.
Yeah, if you throw enough jargon in there and point a pin at someone, that seems... It seems legit to me.
So I pulled up the clip of Noel's big play. Jair Brown is in a vicinity, but he's not the player who messed up. It's number zero, who should have been the corner that played that better.
That's good.
So that's not a Jair Brown problem. He had his own problems. This one doesn't fall on him, though. The Broncos so far, although the 49ers had held people down, the Broncos so far feel like they're going to have more opportunities because of who's available, less injuries outside of Patrick Surtain to affect the way that the Texans like do things, whether it be the big plays or the long drives. Going by how their pass rush can destroy a set of downs and take you from second and four to third and 11, then the drive is over, I think big plays may be. I don't know if the Texans are going to be able to hold off the 49ers front play after play. The 10-12 play drives they ripped off against the 49ers, I don't foresee that being the way they score.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to find chunk plays from someplace because you're just going to give the Broncos too many reps to ruin a drive or force a holding call at some point.
And you're just going to have to be really good against a really good team.
Play after play.
Where it's like, if you can be really good once, and that gets you, I mean, not even like a 60-yard touchdown, but just even gets you 35 yards, now you're in field goal range. Like, that kind of play would be really huge for the Texans. So, yeah, I do think they need to be more big play-oriented. It'll help having Nico Collins back, because so far this year, he's about the only big play threat on their team. Like, We've seen Jalen Nolan flashes, but as far as the guy who, you know, can do it and you know the defense is worried about making a big play, really is just Collins as your guy. We'll see. Obviously, like, Woody Marks has some of that potential, but yeah, we'll see.
All right, we'll go to break with that. There's more news coming out of the NBA poker, illegal gambling, we want to call it controversy or scandal or Operation Royal Flush, whatever you want to call it. If you want to go by what the FBI is calling it, we have another prominent name now attached to it, thanks to the bane of everyone's existence, Pablo Torre. He's found another guy with a big name that's attached to it. We'll mention that in the second hour. But before we get there, I want to remind you, no matter what you're interested in, maybe it's the NBA tonight, maybe it's college football on the weekend, maybe it's First Take right now, KeepMyNetworks.com is the place you go to if you're a YouTube TV subscriber and you're worried about the chance that ESPN leaves that service provider. Sean and I are YouTube TV people, so it's certainly a concern of ours. Go to KeepMyNetworks.com to keep your ESPN. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.